You're listening to a Castaway Media podcast. Find more great shows at castaway.media or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/castawaypodcasts.
Hi guys, this is Steve and you're listening to The Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. Joining me today is the one and only Mads. How are we doing, Mads?
Yeah. I'm fine, Steve. How about you?
I'm pretty good, mate. I'm pretty good. So it's like it's Ericsson and Christensen is back together again.
Back again. Ready to do some live plays.
Some live plays? You like that I've got like a Danish name, sort of like in tribute to Denmark.
It makes me think of this football player. You probably know him because you're a football fan, ain't you?
You're not thinking of Sven Ericsson, are you?
Actually, I don't follow football at all, so I can't remember his first name. I was thinking you had that.
Well, there's a guy, I can't remember his first name at the minute, who plays in the Premier League called Eriksson. And there's obviously Sven Eriksson as well, who was the England manager a few years back.
Okay.
And I think Sven is actually Danish or Swedish for Steven as well. I think.
Yeah,
am I right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm actually Sven Eriksson as well.
That would be you.
That would be me.
Your Viking name.
That's my Viking name, yes. So we're back anyway, aren't we? We're doing our second live play episode. This time we're talking about Bubble Bobble. So in a bit we'll get into that, have a chat about Bubble Bobble, and then we'll obviously be jumping on Amiga Live Play again to do a live playthrough of the game, or you know, a few levels of the game, and then come back afterwards and have a bit of a chat. But how are you doing, mate? Before we get to that, how are you doing, mate?
I'm fine, thanks. I mean, just coming off the weekend here, it's been great having just relaxing with the kids, and well, looking forward to receiving my Nintendo Switch, which I just pre-ordered, for example. So yeah, life is good.
I can't believe you throw money down on that thing.
Of course I did. It's a new Nintendo machine. What was I supposed to do?
No, I mean I can see why people are getting excited about it, and I'm sort of half tempted. I was in a game shop yesterday looking for cheap Xbox One S games because I was in there, and I did notice like loads of Wii U games that were cheap.
Yeah,
and they did look fun because I haven't played many of them, and I looked at them and there was Super Mario and the latest, what's it called, the Wii U Super Mario One, which is 2D.
Super Mario World, 3D World.
Yeah, and there was that splatter one where you splat with people with paint. I can't remember what that's called either.
With the squids, Splatoon.
Splatoon, yeah. The squids in this country mean when you've got the runs, mate, when you've got diarrhea. that's what the squids mean. Yeah. That'd be quite a good game. All the paint would be brown. Yeah. But yeah, like all the games I saw in the shop for the Wii U, I was like, they all look fun, actually, because I've just been looking at all the Xbox games, the Xbox One games, and they're all so bloody serious, you know? It was all like Call of Duty, Infinite Warfare, some horror game, some other miserable game, blah, blah, blah. And then I was looking at all the Wii U games, and it was like, oh, that just looks fun, actually.
So I think I've been on record saying this a lot of times so far, but for my money, the Wii U is the best current-gen console, hands down. It's got the best games, and it's got the games that I've enjoyed the most playing through with my kids. So, yeah, Pikmin 3 and the new Super Mario Brothers, the Super Mario 3D World, and Rayman Legend is excellent on the Wii U and makes great use of the game controller, the whole tablet thing. So there are lots of great games on the Wii U.
Maybe I'll get a Wii U once the price drops on it, because obviously the bottom will fall out the price on it once the Switch comes out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah. So I'm tempted. I've been watching things on the Switch and I'm like, kind of, but then the pricing of it, no. Bloody expensive.
Well, it is a bit expensive, but it's not that bad. I mean, it depends on what you want to compare it to. Of course, if you compare it to when the Wii was launched, it was only like £200, I guess. Maybe even a bit less. But compared to a PS4 or Xbox 360 or Xbox One on their launch dates, it's not that bad.
I suppose, but it's like it's £280-300, I believe, in the UK. And then I might be completely wrong, but what I've seen on it so far is like an extra controller, if you want the proper right pro one or something, it's like nearly £80.
That sounds about right.
That's expensive.
Those are very, very expensive. All the extras are very expensive.
If you want a game with it, the memory stick and
The extra controller, if you want those two little small controllers that you snap onto the tablet, they're like £80 as well. So yeah, it is quite expensive.
So, and this is my issue with it, you see, because I was sort of saying this in our Telegram chat the other day, that Nintendo refurbish old hardware and then sell it at a high price, because what they do is to give it a twist. So for example, the Wii was vastly underpowered in comparison to its contemporaries, so would have been the PS3, I guess, Xbox 360. It was vastly underpowered, but because it had the Wii Motion and the motion control and all the rest of it, they packaged it up as something new, and boom, sold it millions of them. But it was old hardware.
Yeah, but if you want to look at some other markets here, Apple does the exact same thing. I mean, they sell slightly underpowered PCs, and you love Apple, I know. They sell slightly underpowered PCs, but they hone it to perfection. It's a designed machine, and everything just works. You know that all the drivers and stuff works right out of the box. So they give you a nice experience of having this Mac instead of having to muddle around with Windows on a PC. And it's the same thing, really. They charge you 30-40% more for a piece of hardware that you can get easily for a PC as well.
Well, yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, the thing with Apple is that they totally maximize the hardware to the software, don't they? It's totally
so
that's why it's an integrated experience, because that software is built exactly for that hardware. So it's the same with an iPhone. If you take the iPhone specs against the best Android phone, on paper the Android phones are always better. The latest Samsung or whatever is always like, oh, it's got 8 gig of RAM and it's got better resolution and it's got blah 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 blah, faster processor and a quad core processor, 8 core processor, whatever. But when they put the two together, when you watch them speed tests, the iPhone just absolutely smashes it. And once again, it's just because the software is totally honed and configured for the hardware.
Yeah, they have the easier task at Apple, because all of their engineers can just design for one line of Macs. I mean, whether they got 10 different machines, 20 maybe at most, that they need to support, whereas the guys at Microsoft have to support thousands of different configurations. And it's the same with the phones, of course.
Yeah, it's all about software optimization, isn't it? If it's optimized exactly for the hardware, then it's going to run really well. It's going to be smooth. It should be a really smooth user experience. That's my issue. Well, that's my issue with Windows, and that's my issue with Android. They're not optimized for the hardware that they're on. They're all over the place. You know, it's like sometimes you get a good experience and sometimes you get a bad experience, but it's never actually honed and built for the piece of hardware that you've got. So it's always messy, in my eyes.
It does feel like that sometimes, I must say. But as you know, I just got a new Windows machine in my home. I'm a Mac guy as well. I have lots of Macs here.
You're an intelligent guy. This is why, man.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank
no
you,
worries.
Steve.
No worries. Did you have a Commodore 64?
I just got a new Windows machine for playing games on my living room. And I must say, installing Windows 10 and getting the drivers working and all that, it was very, very easy. It's gotten a lot better these past years.
But that's the issue, right? Because you've just nailed it right there. Installing the drivers, that's not a thing on the Mac.
No, that's true. That's true.
That's not a thing. You don't go, I need a driver for this. Where's the driver for my graphics card? Why is it only displaying in 6 colors?
But come on, Steve, you love to play around with your Raspberry Pi for hours to just get that extra 1% of emulated games in there. So installing a driver, that must be easy as well.
That's true. And also, to be fair, I mean, I was faffing with my Raspberry Pi today.
Yeah.
Because I have been, since you posted your bubble score, because it was on the games.
The challenge. Rainbow Islands one.
Sorry, the Rainbow Island score. Yeah, your Rainbow Island score that for the games challenge thing, which was my choice. You posted your score, and then you posted your video as well on a little, which was your little playthrough on how to play it. And I saw you'd posted it, and I thought, oh, I'll check this out. And I watched about a minute of it, and immediately went, I need to play this right now. I want to play it. I need to start playing this game. I haven't got it set up yet. So I grabbed my Blaze, my new Blaze tab, and could I bollocks get that thing running? I have not got it running at all. I spent different kickstarts, different drivers, different Amiga emulators, different ROMs of Rainbow Islands, all different ones. I had 15 different ones. Just can't get it going. Okay. Absolute nightmare. I was fed up with it. So today when I got up, I thought, you know what? Get the RetroPie on the go again. Let's get it working on that. I put one ROM in, one thing in, boom, it was on.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So did you beat my score then?
No, then I spent the whole day faffing about with RetroPie and putting more bits and bobs on it, so I haven't beaten anything.
So, of course you did.
Yeah. But I am coming back now. It's set up, ready to go. I've got it running really nice. So it's on my 50-inch telly, so I'm going to get stuck in and get a score in quickly. I'll do it tomorrow. It's my last day off.
Yeah, it is a great game, so I bet you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. But we've gone all around the houses there, all the way back to the Switch. So, yes, you've thrown your money down on a deposit to get one. I'll get your name down for day one. And I'm going to wait and see what I think of it. Because, like I say, I think it's underpowered hardware with a twist. And the twist being the touchscreen and the, you know, take it out of the holder thing and play immediately and take it, go mobile with it. So let's see, I suppose. Yeah.
I'll be excited to see what it does. So I'm pretty sure it's underpowered when you compare it to a PS4 or Xbox One. But I mean, who needs all of those pixels? I just did need some simple, good gameplay, and that's what I hope Nintendo is going to deliver.
And I mean, I've never played Mario Kart 8, but I've watched videos of it, and it looks fantastic. It just looks like so much fun. It looks totally like so much fun. So I'm like, you don't need world-changing graphics or photorealism in a game like that. It looks like fun. So yeah, I'm going to wait, excuse me, and then possibly see what you guys say, and then I might splash out. Maybe. We'll see. And then I'll sell it.
Of course you will.
As soon as I've got it, I'll sell it. But the other thing about the Switch while we're on it, is like some of the things they've come out with for this new system, it's just nonsense. They wound me up. They totally wound me up. So first of all, if you want to play online, you've got to pay a subscription to play online with other people. If you want to communicate with other people, there's an app for a phone.
Yeah, yeah.
What? My phone's a phone? You idiots. If I want to phone someone up, I'll just ring them. I don't need an app. Just, you know what I mean? That's absolute nonsense. Why is it an app? Why is it on my phone? Why can't I just talk through a headset on the telly and play someone? Am I supposed to play this game one-handed with my phone in the other hand?
But on the other hand, you can actually play with others and talk to others while you're mobile. Perhaps that's the idea. But of course, you could do that through the system as well, because that needs to be on the network as well.
Exactly. So that doesn't make any sense.
Nah, that's true. That's true. That's a bit weird.
The stupidest thing I've ever heard. And then the thing about what you get for your money, for your subscription, the one classic game that you can lend for a bit.
Yeah, I heard about that.
That's ridiculous. So, I mean, come on, Nintendo, just get your head together. And we've talked about this before, but I think you've mentioned it, Paul's mentioned it, we've all mentioned it. Give us a channel of all your retro games. Give us a classic channel that we can go onto, and I'll pay you like a Netflix subscription, and let me get in there and just pick what games I want, and I'll play as many as you want over the month. You know what I mean? Because you're paying your monthly rental. Same as Netflix. Don't be giving me one game that you're going to take off me again, you tight-fisted gits. Ridiculous.
That sounds a bit cheap.
Especially as you're nicking ROMs off the net and then putting them back out as yourselves. Did you hear about that one?
You were mentioning that in the chat. I'm not sure we see eye to eye on that. It's their property. It's their IP. They can do whatever they want. If they pick it up from the net, I don't really care. It's their stuff. So.
No. Well, no. I'm totally down the middle with this one. But they have got a policy, and they lash out at everyone all the time. Do not download ROMs. Downloading ROMs off the net is illegal. That's what their statement is. Downloading ROMs from a website is illegal. But we're doing it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, why are you doing it? You don't need to go on the net. You don't need to go on the net and download a ROM, because you own the ROM and you should have it in a cupboard somewhere. I don't know. Wherever you get it from, you don't need to be going and getting a dodgy one off the net, because then you're practicing what you're telling people not to do. Cheeky bastards.
Yeah, I haven't heard Nintendo themselves spoken in this on this issue? Have they said why they downloaded a ROM instead of dumping it themselves?
Well, they probably they put a statement out and then told themselves to take it down because you're not allowed to say anything about Nintendo. They put a YouTube video up and took it down again. But yeah, anyway, sorry, that rant out the way. But just they blow my mind sometimes. They've got so much brilliant, amazing IP, and they could attract so many more people if they did things in a much more open and friendly manner. They're supposed to be a family company. Be, you know, show these open and friendly values. Make a channel, put all the games on there. People will come in their droves and will pay you whatever a month to have access to it. You know what I mean?
It would be interesting to see. For example, the Wii was sold in millions. So how many games did they actually sell on the Virtual Console? Are they making like boatloads of money out of the Virtual Console as it is right now?
I'd love to know.
Because if they're making lots of money on that, that's probably why they're just keeping this kind of business plan. I mean, perhaps they think they'll lose money if they go to a subscription-based system instead.
I don't know. I mean, I think it would attract retro gamers to the system. It would.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It would totally attract retro gamers. It would be an absolute massive queue. I think a lot of people would turn up for that. And they should be learning that from the NES Classic. They should know now in the action. Because they've basically said recently that the reason you can't get it in the shops, the NES Classic, is because they totally underestimated demand. They thought people in their 40s would go out and buy this. We didn't think millions of people would try and buy it, and it just sold out everywhere. So, you know, wake up, because there's a massive audience who are interested in this kind of stuff, huge audience, and if you can tap into that correctly on your next platform, there's a selling point, because you're selling a strange system. It's interesting at the minute, but there's a selling point. It's got the entire Nintendo back catalogue on it. Boom, everyone's in. Yeah, and there's an argument against your ROMs. You know what I mean? It's like, now you give me a reason not to go and get ROMs off the net, because you're selling me an access to them all in a nice package on a Nintendo system. I'm in. Great.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That would be probably something like what they did on the Wii U with those. They had these NES games packaged into one game. I forget what they're called right now. They released two games. There was remixes of old NES games. We had the original game, as far as I remember, and then you had lots of these little challenges within the games. So give us something nice and packaged like that. People will love it.
You've got the access. You know what I mean? Just do it. Because even with the Virtual Console, it was so slapdash. It was so like, we'll just give you one random thingy PC Engine title, and then we'll give you another NES form that we found. And it was just like, there was no consistency to it. There was no like, here's all the games from 88, and here's here's the top 10 shooters that were ever on the NES, or here's the best. You know what I mean? There was just nothing to it. It was just like, here's another one. Oh, here's one. Do you want that? Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, that's true. What would really sell this was do something like the music services. They do curated lists, and based on what you've been playing before, you'd probably be interested in this game as well. That'd be excellent.
How good would that be? Yeah, even if they give you like a Nintendo channel or a classic channel with all the different games in, but then they do, like you just said, like a playlist. So they go, here's the shooters. This is the top 10 shooters from 88. These were the best. Play these this week.
Yeah.
Or here's what the staff are playing, our favorite adventure games. Or here's the best platformers in this week. Or here's what Nintendo Power Magazine had. There's their top 10 for this month in 1988. Do you know what I mean? How cool would that be? You'd be like, I'm just going to play them because I remember that year and I remember seeing that one. And give us the TV advert or something to go with it, or the magazine reviews. There's so much you could do with this. I want to strangle them.
That's true.
Do me head in.
But it'll be exciting to see if they do any of these things, because lots of other players in the video and music have been doing this for many years now. So they should have somebody to look at and say, hey, we could do something like that.
You just need to get a grip. You know what I mean? Because there's so much opportunity there. And did you play, I think you did, the Rare Replay?
I loved it.
So how well curated is that, and how well packaged and put together?
Yeah, that was a beautiful package. That was actually the sole reason that I bought my Xbox One.
Exactly. Now look at that opportunity for Nintendo. You know what I mean? You've got the option there to like really actually shower some love on your back catalogue. Pick the best ones, even if it's just bloody Super Mario Brothers. Do a Super Mario Brothers package that's done nicely and all put together with loads of information about the development stage and the design artwork and the assets that he built and writing the music and blah, blah, blah. Be amazing. You know, draw people back in.
Yeah, probably would.
Yeah.
But enough ranting about Nintendo. Let's go look at some
rant
of the news.
About something else.
yeah. I think you picked up a lot of news you need to discuss here, right?
Yes, I've picked up the news. So we've done a little deal here because Mads has done all the research on Bubble Bobble. So I've done all the news. So yeah, so I'll talk about new stuff and then Mads can do the bulk of the work on Bubble Bobble. Okay, so yeah, let's do some news then. So the new Amiga CD32 CD is out, which is the Graph Gold collection. So this includes classics like Fire and Ice, Paradroid 90, Rainbow Islands, Super Off-Road and Uridium 2. There's a few others, but they're the big ones, the big hitters. You're a CD32 man, Mads.
Yeah, yeah.
You be getting hold of this?
Yeah, I haven't gotten it yet, no, but it's a great CD. It's got lots of great games on there. Lots of Andy Braybrook titles here.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is definitely one I'm going to be picking up.
Have you used any of the other ones? Because you released a few now.
I have played a lot of them, yeah.
I mean, the packages that they put together, how did they do it? Is it a front end where you can select the different games? Is the music or something? How does it work? I've never got one running yet.
Yeah, they do a front end that I'm not sure how they technically do it, but it's you boot it up on your CD32 or in your emulator, and you get a menu, and it says, okay, press the yellow button to start this game, or press the red or green or blue, or press this direction, and it's all done like that. You have one button that starts one different game normally. That's how they do it. So actually, if you follow the news here at Indie Retro News, they wrote about the graphical collection. You can see the loading screen, and you can see that they've got one button dedicated to each game. And if you press that, I guess it uses WHD load just to load the game, but I'm not sure.
Ah, okay. Nice.
Yeah, it works really well. And sometimes they have altered the games as well. I mean, some of these games did have CD32 releases, so they would be ready to play with a controller with multiple buttons. But sometimes they do go in and alter the game slightly so that you can use a button to jump, for example, instead of pushing up. So that's great when they do those small things.
Nice. So what other ones are there then? Wasn't there a Lotus Esprit one?
Yep, I've played the Lotus Esprit one, and I played some of those. What was it? There was a collection from Bitmap Brothers with Bitmap Brothers games, I think.
Oh,
that was
nice.
Pretty good as well. Yeah, played a lot of those. And then, of course, sometimes they've just been doing these big collections, which is simply a WHD load screen where you pick between 100 different games for your CD32. So that would be original Amiga games, not CD32 games, but you can play them on there, and they've sometimes fixed them to be controlled with the controller instead.
Quality. Yeah, I'm gonna have to try it. So when you've used it then, so you have you burnt the CD off and actually banged it into your CD32?
Yeah.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. I'm gonna try it. I'm definitely gonna try it. But yeah, okay, so that's CD32. So there's also a new version of FSUAE has come out recently, which is version 2.8.3, which is the Amiga emulator that we use.
Yeah, it's an excellent emulator. So easy to use.
Yeah, I mean, on the post, I was reading about it on Indie Retro News, and on the post they were saying that the Amiga FS Arcade is now supporting more games, I think.
Okay.
So it basically it'll look at any legal or illegal ROMs that you've got and then find all the screen artwork and box artwork and everything for the FS Arcade.
I've actually never gotten the arcades to work. I always just used the launcher. So.
The arcade's amazing,
okay.
But I couldn't work out how to add more stuff into it. But this is from a while back. But basically, it's like a nice big launcher. It comes up with sort of like a... Remember when iTunes used to do the sort of pseudo 3D artwork and you'd swipe it left?
Cover
and
flow.
The cover flow, that was it, yeah. So it's got this kind of cover flow for the box art, and then whenever you click on one, it's got screenshots across the bottom.
Okay.
From in-game. It's really nice. Really nice way of doing it. And it pretty much, if you can run it without running FSUAE, so it just hides it.
Okay, so you can use it launches the emulator whenever you pick a game?
Yeah, yeah. It does itself, so it looks basically like a front end.
So you just point it to a directory with the ADF files in, and it does the rest by itself?
Yeah, pretty much. I need to try it again, because I haven't done it for ages, but yeah.
I'll have to try that.
It's nice when you get it running. I'll send you a screenshot, but it's really it's a really nice front end.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know why it's called FSUAE, by the way?
I know the UAE's Universal Amiga Emulator, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Fuck's sake.
It's actually no, it's not that. It's actually named for it's the developer. He's a Norwegian guy, I think, called Frode Solheim.
Ah, so, okay.
Yeah, thought I'd just throw that in there.
Nice. That shout out to your Norwegian, Denmark-y type people.
Yeah, we have to stick together.
Nice. To be fair, I mean, that area of the world is renowned for Amiga development. Back in the day, it was all demo groups and everything from over by you, wasn't it?
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on here, yeah.
Is that where the Silence were based?
I'm not sure.
You know, and Cryonics and all that. Interesting. Yeah, I just remember that it come up on the greets at the bottom, Denmark, all the time. Yeah.
There are lots of these crack throws you see when you play some of the games that you find on the internet that refers to old Danish phone numbers and Danish cities and stuff like that. I see that a lot.
It's ironic, Mads, that you never had any pirated games, considering that's where they were all coming from.
Yeah, that is funny.
Anyway, moving on. So more news. So Rick Dangerous conversion coming to the Atari 8-bits.
Great.
Yeah, I had a look at this today. Looking really nice. Looking very sort of reminiscent of the C64 version. But more colourful, however, more... Each different screen's all sort of a similar colour, and then you move to the next screen and it's all another different colour. Okay. But it looks good. Looks really good.
Yeah, it's good to see Rick Dangerous getting some more love. It's a great game.
Yeah, absolutely. Although the level I watched on the little clip of it, I didn't really recognise. There was dogs running from left to right. I don't know if that's further into Rick Dangerous.
There is some point where there are guard dogs. Or is that in Rick Dangerous 2? I forget.
Because that's what I thought, but then this was... supposed to be a remake of Rick Dangerous 1.
Okay.
So, interesting. Yeah. Other news. Have you watched Amiga Story by Nostalgia Nerd on YouTube?
No, I haven't.
I haven't seen it myself yet, but I keep seeing posts about it. So I had a quick glance today, and there's two videos he's done. Just the history and the story about the Amiga. The second video seemed to be more focused up onto the CD32. I'm going to go back and give them a watch because I've seen a lot of people are raving about them. So if you want to get another fix aside from Viva Amiga or Bedroom to Billions, this looks a bit more homegrown, but looks really good.
Sounds interesting.
Loads of like advert clips from back in the day and stuff. So I'm definitely going to give that a go. So I think on the next episode, I'll give it a bit of a review, a bit more information on it anyway.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. What else have we got? The news. So, Paul Monahan has had a baby.
Yeah, I read that on Twitter today. I congratulated him. So, congratulations again, Paul, if you're listening.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't had a baby. His missus has had a baby.
That's true.
Yeah.
As somebody who's been there, it does feel like you had a baby yourself. I mean, it's tough to see your wife having a baby.
I think I would be quite old-fashioned and just go to the pub.
Okay.
Give me a text. When it's ready. No, I don't know. But massive congratulations to Paul. I'm a little bit disappointed that he hasn't got a retro name. I thought it might have. No, Baby Theo. So congratulations to Paul and Baby Theo, and good to hear that it's gone well. So yeah, made up for him. Give it a few months, it'll be the same size as Paul. Sorry, Paul, I'm only kidding. I can't laugh. I'm about an inch taller than him. Well, yeah, that's great news. So congrats to him and his missus. And what else have we got? Oh, yeah, so we had our Simon Butler episode a couple of episodes back.
Yeah, that was an excellent interview you did there.
Ah, thanks, man. That's why I brought it up. I enjoyed doing that interview. It was a bit Marmite on the response to it. Afterwards, I think for the most part, we had a lot of positive responses to it. I think a lot of people were interested in hearing a different take on what the industry was like back in the day. And we did have, we had quite a lot of people getting in touch saying, you know, they loved it and it's good to hear something, refreshing to hear someone really telling it how it was. And obviously we had a couple of people who were a bit more negative about it as well.
Yeah, well, an episode like that will do that because, of course, he was very candid about, the people he worked with and all that. So it's going to be a dividing episode, no matter how you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think from our point of view, just as a retro side, I mean, obviously, we have lots of different guests on. Sometimes we agree with their opinions, sometimes we don't agree with their opinions, but that's, you know, it's still, we could never have someone on and then censor them. You know what I mean? That's not what we're about. We're about inviting a guest on and allowing them to speak openly and freely about, you know, what they want to talk about. That's why we have them on. We want to know this stuff, whether it's good, whether it's bad, you know, whether it's telling you some dark stories that you never would have heard about software houses back in the day, or, you know, when it's the great side of making games and stuff. But we, you know, we invite guests on to give their opinion and tell their story. And I think that's what we've got to be about. So, you know, I'll apologize now to anyone who's like offended by, there's a fair bit of swearing on it by him and myself. If that's not your thing, you know, my apologies. But, you know, we did put a 18 rated, what's it called? The thingy language rating.
Oh, yeah, explicit.
We did, yeah. So we did put an explicit language thing on it to let people know, you know, but, you know, that's why we have guests. And I was really glad to have him on the show. I think he, you know, it was a fascinating listen to the things he had to say. But once again, you know, if that wasn't your cup of tea, then my apologies. But, you know, I was glad he came on.
Yeah, I can only speak for myself, and I thought it was very, very interesting. One of the best interviews we've done in a long while. So that was really good. And I think probably you saw most of the negative feedback because you did the episode. Counting it, it'll probably be like 9 out of 10 were positive. So and very positive. A lot of guys loved the episode. So no worries there, mate.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just, you know, we try and get these guests on to give us a different side, or, you know, give, you know, we want to bring these things to our listeners. Something new, something you never heard before, you know, different angles. So they're learning about the industry in the same way that we are, and it's exciting. So, you know, I think we've always got to have that sort of like policy of being open and allowing our guests to come on and speak freely about whatever they want to speak about. And that's what we do. So, you know, and I hope people don't mind that, but that's what we do. There was a couple of people who went on iTunes. Well, there was one person who went on iTunes and gave us a negative review about it. So, whatever, you know what I mean? But, you know, we do it for our fans as well. So I just hope that the majority of people enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
Yeah. So shall we start talking about Bubble Bobble?
Let's do. It's one of my favorite games from back in the day.
Tell us about Bubble Bobble, Mads.
So let's start a little bit about my personal experience with Bubble Bobble. Bubble Bobble was a game for me that, of course, started in the arcades. I used to play the arcade game probably back in 87, I think, with my brother and my friends. I loved that game. And when I finally got my Commodore 64 and I got the Commodore 64 version, I used to play that all the time with my brother. And we actually did finish it back in the day on the 10 credits that you get. Never on a single credit. I am not that good at the Bubble Bobble. But on the 10 credits, we could finish it in multiplayer mode. So how about you? What's your story with Bubble Bobble?
I played it briefly on my Commodore 64, but it was only just before I got the Amiga.
Okay.
And then I got it on the Amiga and played it with Paul up the street just all the time. In fact, there was a lad who lived further up the street at the top of the close who had an Amiga and used to go and play it with him as well. I just thought at the time it was arcade perfect.
Yeah, yeah. When I got the Amiga version, I told myself that it was arcade perfect for a long time, and I didn't play the arcade version. But when I finally played the arcade version again, I can see that it is still miles ahead of the Amiga version.
Yeah, I think as a conversion, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's
absolutely
really good.
Fantastic. It's so good. I think musically, it's absolutely, sonically, it's perfect to the arcade.
Yeah, yeah,
it's absolutely perfect. I think the arcade's just a little bit more fluid and a bit smoother, a little bit quicker maybe to play.
Yeah, yeah, and the as I remember it, the sprites are a bit more defined, more colors and stuff like that. But it's a very good conversion. It's and both the Commodore 64 and the Amiga version are very, very true to the arcade game. It's the exact same level layout as I remember it. Whereas some of the other conversions, for example, on the NES, for example, they do change some of the stages. But the Amiga and C64 versions are good ones.
Yeah, I it was class. I think it's not quite as colorful or as well defined on the C64, but it's really, really playable.
Yeah, but of course our Spectrum loving friends will tell us that the little dragons on the C64 version were totally squashed because of the non-square pixels.
still be better than the Amstrad version.
Yeah, and the people on on the Spectrum would be playing with the not the dragons, but just an outline of the dragons. So I don't know if that's better.
Well, no, it's obviously not. It's obviously not.
Exactly.
You know,
it's like, nice to be recording with you, Steve. We can
agree
okay,
on this. That's okay, mate. You know, I am horrifically biased towards the C64. It's fine. Literally anything you say, I will just agree that the Commodore is better, even when it isn't. No, this, I think the Speccy version is pretty good from what I can recall. I can't, you know, I can't call it to mind at the minute. But yeah, I think it was, a lot of Speccy games remind me of like Game Boy games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like that sort of two-tone, the nice high-res definition, but not much in the color department.
So as I remember the Spectrum version, I did play that. The sprites are layout-wise very, very like the arcade sprites, but they're only the outline of the sprites. So it does look good in its own way.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but we're not here to bash the Spectrum right now, so
We'll come back to that. We'll circle back around to bashing the Spectrum.
We can do that later on. So Bubble Bobble, it was released in 1986 in the arcades, and of course it's a Taito game. It's developed by a guy called Fukio Mitsuchi, who also did Rainbow Islands, by the way. He did the sequel in 87, I think. And he's not known for doing a lot of games, but he did do a handful of really good games when he worked at Taito. And funny story is that he actually designed Bubble Bobble to be a game that would appeal to women as well. So his idea was that he wanted to make an arcade game that was a challenge so that the guys would want to play it. So it had to be hard and had to be, it had to be a lot of different levels to get through and some good gameplay mechanics. But he also wanted it to appeal to the women. So that's why it's so cute. The cutesy graphics and the cute little sprites for the enemies as well. And the whole mechanic with not really killing the enemies, but just putting them into bubbles and then killing them that way made it more approachable, he thought, for women. So he wanted this to be a game for the couples, to get the couples into the arcades. Because back then in Japan, you didn't see women in the arcades very often. So that's a little bit of a fact that I didn't know beforehand. So I'm really looking forward to playing this with you, Steve. We can have a bromance going here.
We'll get a bromance on the go. it's curious, isn't it, then, that he didn't make one of the dragons female? Because if he wanted couples to play it, would have made loads of sense for player two maybe to be a pink dragon.
Yeah, that's true. This is still just a rescue the damsel in distress game. Yeah, that's true. He should have made one of them female. But you are playing Bob and Bob, who are two little boys who enter into the cave of monsters. Is that what it says in the beginning? And
don't
are turned and into boobs. bubble dragons.
Don't listen to that. I'm just trying to think of the female name for Bob. Go on, carry on.
And the two boys are there to find their girlfriends, I think, who have been kidnapped by Baron von Blobber, perhaps? I'm not really sure who kidnaps them. And actually, I'm not sure that the story even knows who kidnaps them. They are kidnapped by some force unknown to us. And actually, the game has three endings when speaking of the story. I mean, if you finish it in single-player mode, you'll get the bad ending. So if you beat the game in single-player mode, you only rescue one of the two girls, and the game will tell you, never forget your friend, and send you back to the start of the game.
Nice.
So if you want the good ending, you have to beat it in multiplayer, and then you rescue both of the girls. But then you're informed that you haven't reached the true ending. So it'll give you a code to input at the title screen to unlock the super mode, and then you must beat that, all of the levels, all the 100 levels, once more in a harder way. And then you get the true ending, where you can free the two girls. And as I remember it, actually, when you defeat the last boss is this mega drunk. You know, one of the enemy types here is a drunk that throws bottles at you. And if I remember correctly, he's the last boss. And when you beat him in the true mode, I've never done this myself. I've only read about it. He turns into your mom and dad. So it turns out that your parents had been turned into this monster, and by somebody, by the same person probably who kidnapped the girls. And so you're actually fighting your own parents in the end.
I love the Japanese.
Yeah, they're so weird.
They're absolutely so mental. The story's just absolutely mental. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
That's just like there's some kind of crazy psychology going on there. It's like, oh, it's actually your parents who've kidnapped your girlfriend.
Yeah.
And they're drunk. Your drunk parents.
And I guess, today it would be weird that some of the enemies are, for example, drunks that are throwing bottles at you. And, strange little gnomes pushing biscuits at you as well.
Yeah, they look like spinning cookies, don't they, or something?
Yeah, they do. They do. Yeah. But talking about the sprites, actually, one thing I found out researching this game that I didn't know before was that a lot of the sprites for the enemies are actually reused from a game from 1983 by Taito called Check and Pop. I don't know. Have you played that before, Steve?
No.
No, it's a single screen platformer as well, like Bubble Bobble. But you're not controlling cute little dragons. You're controlling this weird little yellow guy. And there are these, when you begin a level, then in the top part, there's a guy pushing a small gem or a boulder. And that sprite is the guys, the little gnomes or pixies or whatever they are that throw cookies at you in Bubble Bobble. So they're standing there at the top trying to push a boulder to the other side. And when they get too far, that means time's up. And somebody will come and chase you, like Baron von Blobber, that skull head does in Bubble Bobble. So you have to free a heart that's been captured in one part of the screen. And when you free that, it floats to the top, and then you have to navigate up there. But all the while doing that, these eggs will hatch. And out of the eggs comes these monsters. And the monsters are the one called Monster in Bubble Bobble. They are the dragon-like monsters, you know, the purple dragons. There was, for example, inside the heart of level 13, you know, there are all these purple dragons flying around. And lots of the different monster sprites are actually taken directly from Check and Pop, it seems. So it's a fun game. It's not as enjoyable as Bubble Bobble, especially the way you kill the monsters is you have this kind of hand grenade that you throw. You can throw two at a time, one to the left side and one to the right. You have to make sure you don't get hit yourself when they explode, and they're quite hard to control to actually hit the monsters with. But if you want to see where some of the inspiration for Bubble Bobble and definitely where some of the sprites come from, check out Check and Pop in MAME. It's a fun little game.
No, it sounds like it's worth a look. So have you got any tips before we get into playing it? Have you got any tips for Bubble Bobble? Because the only tip I can remember from when I played it back in the day was catching all the monsters together in the bubbles, get them all before you pop them.
Yeah,
so if you bunch them all together.
If you bunch them together and pop them in one go, you get, I think, 1,000 for the first, and 2, 4, 8, 16, and so on and so forth. You get a lot of points by getting them all together before you pop them. But other than that, I mean, one important method to get some of the bonuses is that when you're playing multiplayer, you have to keep one of the players alive. Because if one of the players have not died once when you get into the level 20, for example, there's a portal there, so you can enter a special world that's full of diamonds you can pick up. And oh, nice. the same thing appears, I think, in level 30. And then in level 50, I used to do this with my brother. We would take turns being the guy who couldn't die, so the guy who had to be protected. So if you get to level 50, if I remember correctly, you would enter a portal that would throw you all the way to level 70, so you can skip 20 levels like that.
Okay, so we need to try this in a minute. We need to try and keep one of us alive.
Yeah, let's try that. But that it is quite hard, and I must say I haven't been playing Bubble Bobble a lot these last couple of years, so let's see.
That's okay. I don't mind you trying to keep me alive.
yeah, I'm sure you don't.
Yeah, no, we'll give it a go. So before we actually dive into the live play, though, so tell us a little bit more about the heritage of it. So what came after Bubble Bobble? And I know obviously
there's one more game that came before Bubble Bobble that was very that had inspired Bubble Bobble a lot, and that's the Fairyland Story. That it's from 1985. It's still from Taito. That's 101 single screen kill 'em all levels, just like in Bubble Bobble. Well, in Bubble Bobble you only have 100, of course, but in Fairyland Story you had 101 single screen levels. We had to kill all the cute little monsters as well. But this time you are a fairy, this fairy character instead. You're not the cute bubble dragons. But it's a game that's in many ways resemble Bubble Bobble very much. But Bubble Bobble is just more finely tuned. And it's cuter, of course, because he wanted the women to be interested as well. But it's the level design is a lot better, I find, in Bubble Bobble. It's they did actually design most of the levels to be completable and not just a coin guzzler. But there are some later levels that are very, very hard to get through. So you definitely need to put in some extra coins in the arcade. But Bubble Bobble itself was, of course, ported to a host of machines. And I've written down a small list here. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
It was ported to the Amiga, the Amstrad CPC, Atari ST, Commodore 64, the MSX, the NES, the ZX Spectrum, the Sega Master System, Apple II, MS-DOS, or just DOS back then, FM Towns, and the Game Boy, and the Sharp X68000, and the Game Gear. All of those platforms got the original Bubble Bobble. A lot of other platforms have different versions of Super Bubble Bobble, or whatever they chose to call it, but the original game was released on all of those platforms. And while all of these... Well, not all of these. Most of these are very, very true to the arcade original. Some of them do take some liberties. Like, for example, the Game Boy version. It's got scrolling, probably to get over the fact that they didn't have a lot of pixels to do this with. So you do have scrolling levels instead. And the level layouts, they did really use some of the original levels, but a lot of them have been changed slightly so they can actually be navigated in this scrolling fashion. But that's a good game, actually. You should pick that up if you see it in a thrift store. I've got it myself for my Game Boy, and I really enjoy playing that. Have you tried the Game Boy version?
I probably have back in the day, but I can't remember now. Was there a Game Boy Color or a Game Boy Advance version as well?
I'm not sure. Not of the original, I think. I'm sure there was a Bubble Bobble variant on the Game Boy Advance, but not the original as far as I know.
Okay. I'll have a look for it, though. Yeah, I've got my Game Boy upstairs, so that'd be a nice little one to add to the collection.
Bubble Bobble is great.
But
if you want a really good old-school version of Bubble Bobble that's not the arcade, I really like the Sega Master System port. It's very beautiful. I like it better than the NES, for example. The NES, the bubbles are not only an outline, and there's some sprite flickering. But on the Sega Master System, it looks almost arcade perfect for an old 8-bit system. So that's a good version to check out as well. But apart from all of the different ports, there were a lot of sequels in the Bubble Bobble story here. I mean, there are some sequels that are real Bubble Bobble sequels, like Rainbow Islands is actually called the story of Bubble Bobble 2, and Parasol Stars as well is supposed to be the story of Bubble Bobble 3. But Rainbow Islands strayed away from the single screen platformer and made it into a vertically scrolling platform instead. Of course, we're playing Rainbow Islands right now in the gaming club, so please join us there and see if you can beat my high score. And Parasol Stars took it back again to something that was reminiscent of the Bubble Bobble single screen platformer. For some reason, Parasol Stars always reminded me of Snow Bros a bit more than Bubble Bobble. But that's a great game as well. But there are also some sequels that are true Bubble Bobble sequels, where you are the Bubble Dragons and it's a single screen platformer. And those are Bubble Bobble 2, which is also called Bubble Symphony. That was released in 1994 in the arcade. That's a really, really great game. And Bubble Memories, which is also subtitled The Story of Bubble Bobble 3, which was released in 1995 in the arcades. So both of these games are excellent versions of Bubble Bobble. And they do add some more stuff themselves. Like, if I remember correctly, it's in Bubble Memories that you can hold down the button that you use to blow bubbles with, to blow a giant bubble. And you need that to defeat some larger enemies and also to defeat many enemies at the time. So both Bubble Bobble or Bubble Symphony and Bubble Memories are definitely games that our listeners should check out if they haven't already. And they are really good games in their own right. Even if you don't particularly enjoy the original Bubble Bobble, check out these games. And of course, there were some spin-outs as well. The most notable one probably being Puzzle Bobble, or Buster Move, as it's called in US, I think.
Yeah.
So
the one where you got to pop the bubbles at the top.
Yeah, it's a match three game, right? You have to match the colors, and it's a great multiplayer game, or a competitive multiplayer game. I used to play that a lot.
Yeah, I think I had that on my original DS, and you'd use the bottom touchpad to like stretch the sort of lazy band to shoot them.
I'm pretty sure that Puzzle Bobble was ported to any platform you'd ever want as well.
It's great, though. It's got such a rich tapestry of games evolving from the first one. It's nice that it went in one direction. It evolved into different methods of gameplay. So, for example, your Rainbow Islands, where you're firing your rainbows, and then your Parasol Stars, where you're using your umbrellas to fall and poke. Yeah. But then you did have the direct sequels as well, which were still the dragons with the... shooting bubbles.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, Fukio Mitsuchi himself, who did Rainbow Islands, he didn't want to just reuse all of the stuff from Bubble Bobble. I mean, Taito wanted him to do a direct sequel, just give us 100 new levels and make a new game for us. But he didn't want to do that. He wanted to do something new. So he insisted that he would be let, we'd be given access to developers so he can do a fully new game with the scrolling and all of that. And that was what gave us Rainbow Islands. And in the third installment, which was Parasol Stars from 1991, Fugio Mitsuchi wasn't involved anymore, so they went back to the single-screen platformer. But I do love that they did go back to it in 94 and 95 as well and give us some more true sequels that were just like the original game with the Bubble Dragons.
So conversion-wise, we know that Bubble Bobble was converted to everything ever and was pretty much across the board very, very good. And then Rainbow Islands, the same story. Well, I mean, I've been playing today Rainbow Islands on the Amiga, and it's an excellent conversion again.
Yeah.
What about Parasol Stars? Did that make it onto all the different platforms, and is it any good?
Parasol Stars wasn't converted to very many platforms. Funnily enough, it's the only of the games that weren't an arcade game. It was the original platform was the PC Engine. And it's a great game on the PC Engine. You should try to play it there if you can, in an emulator, if you haven't got a PC Engine yourself. But there's an Amiga version as well, an Atari ST version, and an NES version, I think. And I think there may even have been a Game Boy version, I seem to remember.
Okay.
But I've only really played the PC Engine and Amiga versions myself. And of those two, the PC Engine version is definitely the one to play. The Amiga version isn't bad, but having a controller with multiple buttons is good for this game.
Yeah. I'll fire that up on my RetroPie in a bit and have a look. It'll be on there somewhere. My RetroPie seems to have everything on it now, which is great.
That just happened by itself?
Yeah, I just got it one day, and it spawned every single game ever on anything.
Nice.
yeah, result.
No, but do check out the Parasol Stars. Do you like Snow Bros?
I haven't played Snow Bros, or I don't think I have. I always hear people talking about it, and I just can't recall it at all.
You have to check that out. That's a great game as well. But I think Parasol Stars feels a bit like that. There's some fun mechanisms there. You can pick up enemies on your umbrella and throw them at the other enemies. And in some levels, there are water droplets falling down. You can pick these up and throw them at enemies as well. And if you pick up enough of them, I think probably five of them, when you throw them, it's like when you hit one of the water balloons in Bubble Bobble. You know, when you release all this water that just comes cascading through the level and washes all the monsters away. So they've got that mechanism as well here.
Okay, I'll have to check. So was that converted to everything, or was that just on the arcade?
Snow Bros. Actually, there are a lot of conversions, but I'm not sure which platforms are the best. I always play the arcade version.
Okay. Yeah, I shall give them a look then, and get back to you.
Yeah.
So, enough talk of Bubble Bobble. Shall we play some Bubble Bobble?
Yeah, let's do.
Live play. Well, here we go.
Okay, here we go, guys. So, Matt,
I love this piece of music.
That's what I was going to say. You love this bit of music.
It makes me so happy, and it reminds me of my childhood immediately. So
nice.
And then here goes the theme song that we're going to be listening to a lot. So right now we're going to be enjoying it, and then in 5 minutes we're going to be hating it.
Yeah, yeah. To be fair, it's such a catchy tune.
Yeah, it is. I used to drive my mother crazy with that song because I taught myself how to play it on the piano.
So really?
I'm playing that all the time.
Just to make it worse. Not just on the game, but on the piano as well. I like it.
Yeah, it is quite simple. So there's not that much to learn.
So guys, we're on to level 2 of Bubble Bobble. Another live player, me and Mads.
So sometimes we get the bonuses in this stage. So one of those bonbons or whatever it is pops up here.
Okay, I'm gonna pop everyone. No, missed one.
Oh, But we got the soda bottle instead, so we need to get half of these each, because then we get the big bonus, right?
Okay, yeah.
Ooh, I can't reach that one.
Oh, no. So we're trying to catch the bonuses at the minute of the...
So the funny thing is, with the computer versions of Bubble Bobble, you can't blow bubbles while you're in this collecting soda stuff here.
The extra level, so...
But yeah, that actually means you can't get all of them in this level.
Yeah, so this level that we're on, we just unlocked a load of bonuses. They're in the top corners of the screen and we can't reach them.
That's something that's happened in a lot of the conversions, really, because on the arcade, you can, as far as I remember, you can still blow bubbles, even though you picked up one of the soda bottles. But you can't on the C64, and you can't here on the Amiga, as we just saw.
So. That is weird, isn't it?
So, go ahead.
Let's do it.
Yeah, so four at a time. How much did that give you? 16,000 points?
Nice.
Oh, and you got all of it. Thanks, Steve.
That's okay, mate.
Thanks, Obama. Or...
I should just point out I'm a very selfish gamer.
No worries. We'll see who gets the highest score here then.
Yeah, man. So we're on to level... what are we on?
Four.
Four, there it is in the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So far, flawless. No one's lost a life. Oh.
So that was 32,000 points in one go there.
Nice. So did I let you get that one then?
Yep.
I wasn't paying attention.
I'm far ahead of you.
I wasn't paying attention.
So already now, I think the tune has probably looped 5-6 times.
It just doesn't stop, does it?
This will drive you crazy.
Whoa.
I want that tea.
Get the tea.
I didn't get it.
So I think this is the first level where you see the water pour down when you burst the bubble with a load of water in. Yeah.
That's some of the points, some of the things that makes the bubble bubble fun when you're in the later levels, all the different lightning bubbles and fire bubbles and water bubbles and what have you.
Yeah.
There is some variety here.
It's a fairly easy learning curve at first, isn't it? The levels are pretty easy.
Yeah.
For the first 10 maybe.
Hmm.
And then it starts getting more and more difficult. So
it gets more difficult when you get to level 13, as I remember, because that's when you get to that big heart.
Oh yeah.
Ooh. And that can be a bit tough.
Give me the bubble.
Oh, I got it.
Nice.
So you and I, we played this game earlier on, and we talked about this. There's a bug in the C64 version, so you can actually shoot through some of the walls. And it's not that easy to do it here in the Amiga version, but sometimes you can actually do it. And we're going to need that later on.
Yeah.
So you go for it. There's an X there you need.
Yes!
There you go. Did you get it? No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. Of course I didn't.
Okay. You got the monsters.
Got the monsters. So we're on to level 8, just coming up.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we're still playing it via Amiga Live.
Yeah.
We're doing that quite a bit now, and it works brilliantly, so please, everybody, go try that.
Well, not only that, I think if people start getting onto Amiga Live, they could possibly join us for a game.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
We could look into hosting a Retro Asylum server.
Yeah. See how really bad I am. So level 9, and like I say, still fairly easy. It's getting a little bit more packed on screen now.
This can be a bit tricky, this level. Oh, we're doing really good.
Nice.
So we're not getting any of the bonuses, any of the bong-bongs or whatever they are that makes your bubbles fly faster or longer.
Yeah, like
or...
the trainees that make you go faster and... Yeah. That happened last time we played as well, remember? There was like...
Yeah.
That's about 40 levels before we got anything good.
It's because we're being impatient. We're doing these levels very quickly and the bonuses only show up after a short while. So I'm going in... Let's see... Now... Did it work? Oh, and now they're coming down to you then.
Sorry, nice. I've got them at this end. Pop them up.
Great. We just need that guy then.
Get across. Lasers? Fireballs.
Ooh,
nice.
Fireballs. Hey, I forgot that one. Cool.
So Matt's just collected a cross there. And he's got fireballs instead of bubbles.
So on the arcade, I think when I shot you, you'd be unable to move for just a split second.
No, you'd stun me.
Oh, yeah, this one again. I forget. It's one like this. There was water balloons there. Oh, I got two of them. Great. Ooh. So that was me screaming like a girl.
No change there, Mats.
Thanks. Come on. Oh, no, he got me.
Nice. Big case.
So, Steve, did you die at all in this game?
Nope.
So I need to keep you alive now, because we really want to see if we can get to level 20 without dying, so we get that portal.
So without me dying?
Without you dying, yes. Yes.
No pressure.
So you have to be careful.
I'll just stay in the corner and not do anything.
Watch it.
Oh, I fell down the gap. Shoot. Ooh. Kill him.
That's the last one.
Yes. Cool. Still alive.
Nice. Yep.
Going on to level 13.
We're in for the bad level, the 13th, the hard.
Starts getting tough now.
So you're going to get sweaty palms now. You know you can't die.
Oh, man.
Oh, I jumped right into him. Okay, come on, yeah. Go. No! Oh, God. Ah, damn it. I wasted that one. So now we can just stand here and wait for the water bubbles.
Okay. I'm sure this is the level with the umbrella, but we can't get it.
Umbrella? Can we get that? I'll try. Let's see. If I die, it's no big deal.
Well, yeah, I just pop the water and nothing happened.
Oh, no.
It's going to disappear.
No, I didn't get it. Well, I tried.
Damn it. I think the umbrella thing is like... Oh.
Forgot that one. We only need the last... Watch it.
Oh, no. Oh, man. Jump. Oh, man. That's the end of that. Bollocks. Oh, one left. Dead.
Oh, and I died as well.
Shit.
Live play. Hi guys, and we are back from our live play. Well, some of the live play. It turns out that we played quite a lot of Bubble Bobble on our credits, didn't we, Mads?
Level 84. I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah, level 84 we have just done. We have pretty much given you a few levels taster for this podcast, because we just thought if we actually include the whole thing, I think it was about 57 minutes long. So it's going to be longer than the podcast itself. So yeah, so level 84, mate, that was quite an impressive run we just had.
Yeah, it was. And listeners, if you do want to watch us play through to level 84, you can check it out on YouTube, of course.
Yes, indeed. So there will be a link with this podcast for the full playthrough that we did in our amazing 84 levels of Bubble Bobble. Also, just to point out as well, going forward, we haven't managed to get it set up at this point, but going forward on the next live play episodes, we're going to be streaming live via Twitch as well. So we'll be notifying people, letting people know on Facebook and on Twitter and everything prior to that. So if you want to watch us actually play and hear us chatting for the actual recording that'll end up in the podcast, you'll be able to come and watch us on Twitch. Say hello to us. Send us some messages. If you message us on Twitch, we'll say hello to you, and that might end up in the actual episode itself. And we are looking as well for a few lucky players to get people to actually play against us as well, which we can try and set up, and maybe that'll end up in the YouTube clips and on the podcast as well. We'll have to see. But yeah, we are looking to play you guys as well. If you can get yourself Amiga Live set up on your PC or Mac, then we can get you invited, get you involved, and you might actually end up on the show with us. But yeah, jumping back to Bubble Bobble, Mads.
Yeah, it was a great game. It was a great game. I totally forgot about all of the special bubbles. I mean, the bubbles with the lightnings in and with the water, of course. I remembered that one, but I love all of those little details.
Yeah. It seems to take us ages to get any decent power-ups.
Yeah, that's fun, though. I mean, I used to get power-ups all the time in the C64 version. I knew which levels to just wait a little, then they would pop up, but we seem to get almost none.
Yeah, not much at all, and then... Because I remember as well when I played it on one player that I'd get loads quickly. I'd get like the boots to run around faster, which we barely got.
I think perhaps the problem here was that we were being too efficient. We just cleared the levels as fast as we could. If you wait a little, I mean, there's always a delay before the power-ups, they appear. So probably that was the problem here.
Maybe we weren't giving them enough time to actually turn up.
Yeah, perhaps. But getting all the way to level 84, you know what that means. We have to finish this game. No, it doesn't mean that we're amazing. We have to try this once more and finish this game. I want to get at least the good ending. The true ending I can live without seeing.
Because we need to trial out our Twitch channel ready for the next episode. Maybe what we'll do is maybe one night this week, or if we get a chance in the next, you know, few days or whatever, is we'll do another live play. But it won't be for the podcast. It won't be an episode. It'll just be me and you trying out Twitch.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
And we'll have another crack at it.
It'd be a good idea to test it before we actually start recording. So
yeah, so we'll give it another go with it. So we'll have another run through on Bubble Bobble, and we'll try and clock it. So hopefully this episode will be out before we do it, so people can know that we're going to do it. But if it's not out before, then sorry you missed it, guys. But it was great. No, but what we'll do, we'll throw it out on Twitter and Facebook and everything, and we'll get, you know, try and get people invited along to see the maiden voyage of Twitch, the Retro Sound Twitch channel. And we'll challenge accepted, Mads. Gauntlet to lay down.
Yep,
let's try and clock it. Clock Bubble Bobble. Considering we haven't played it for years, level 84 on our first go. I mean, yeah, we used all the credits up.
Yep,
well, that's what you do. That's what you do. It's, you know, how many credits is it? 10? Was it 10?
Yep, 10 credits. Yeah,
that's not bad. 84 levels.
That's pretty good.
I think next time we can do it.
We didn't get any of the portals, though. It was hard to stay alive all the way to round 20.
I tried so hard. We're so close. Mm. We're so close staying alive, and then I died.
That's true. How far did we get? 18? 17?
We've been playing that many levels. I can't remember now, but it was only a few levels away. We were getting close.
Yeah.
I think we were two or three levels away from the portal, and then I died like an idiot.
We'll get that the next time.
We'll get it. We'll do it right. Obviously, we're experts now. I mean, first go 84. You're going to nail it next time, aren't we? Easy.
Yeah, of course.
You probably won't use any credits up.
I'm not sure about that.
But yeah, let's do it. So we'll do that. So did you were telling me the other day as well, and we've forgotten to mention this in the earlier part of the episode, you looked up the names of all the monsters.
Yeah, they're different names, and depending on where you look, but some of them have really, really funny names. We spoke about earlier about those dragon-like types, you know, those that were there in level 13.
Yeah.
So they're called, in Japanese, they're just called monster. But for some reason, the English title is beluga, and sounds pretty funny to me. But they're also... Some really good ones. The one I usually call the drunk is actually called Willy Whistle. I like that. and the little white gnomes that push the cookies, they're called stoners.
Of course they are.
I'm not sure who gave them all these names, but I found them while going through the Bubble Bobble wiki. There's actually a Bubble Bobble fan wiki at the Wikia. I don't know how that's pronounced. But there are lots of information about Bubble Bobble and all of the games related to Bubble Bobble there.
It's an amazing game, to be honest. I mean, I think it plays better in two-player than it does in one-player. I think it's a lot more fun.
It's definitely a two-player game. And as you could see in some of the later levels, it would be impossible to get through them in single-player mode. For example, there's this one level where we started on each side, as we do every time, in a small funnel with a monster. It'd be impossible to go down there and kill that monster if the other player hadn't been there before already doing it. I mean, playing that in single player mode, you'd have to die.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm not sure I can see how that can be completed in single player mode, because if you die, you've got hit flash for what, 5-10 seconds. You can't navigate all the way over there because you have to jump on your bubble to get all the way up and to the other side and then down again. So I'm not sure I see how it's possible to get through that level in single player mode.
You just have to. I think you probably get a fluky once in 10 goes, catch it in a bubble before it killed you. Possibly. Like just once every now and then, but you'd lose an absolute ton of lives.
There definitely are later levels where you need to be two players to get through them, and that's what they were designed to. So,
yeah.
It's a tough game like that. But of course, I guess in the arcade, you could just, if you kept on dying in that level, you could just put in another coin and then push two-player start instead. I mean, just start as player two. That would probably be a possibility, because then you get him.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. But yeah, overall, especially in a two-player capacity, it's just it's a good, fun two-player game.
Yeah, it is just such a classic game.
Yeah. especially when you sort of team up and you cooperate with each other to beat the level.
Yeah,
that's the trick. It's like you go over there and you trap them in that corner. I'm going up this side, and I'll grab these, and then one of us will get the extra as well to get to the bonus level or whatever. You know, it's just it's definitely, if you're playing together and you work as a team, you'll nail it. Like, well, obviously, like we just did.
So you play together and you work as a team all the way until the last monster is killed. Then you're against each other trying to get the bonuses before the other guy.
Oh, yeah, grab the fruit. yeah, definitely. So what are we giving this out of 10, Mads? Not that we normally give things out of 10, and I've just made this up on the spot, but what are we giving it out of 10?
I mean, this is a pure 10 out of 10 for me, because strictly for the nostalgia reasons. This is one of my favorite games from back in the day, and I spent so much time playing it with my brother, my older brother. In fact, it's the only game that we still play, as I mentioned, when we were playing this. We still occasionally, just once every 3 or 4 years, we do play something together, and it will always be the C64 version of Bubble Bobble. That's a great game.
I can't commit to a 10, because that's the perfect score, and there's got to be something out there that is the ultimate perfect 10, so I can't commit to a 10. But in multiplayer mode, it's a 9. In two-player mode, it's a
solid game.
It's really good. It's a 9 in two-player mode. In one-player mode, it's probably a 7.5 to an 8
on its
own in one-player mode. But it's meant to be played as two-player, and played as a two-player, it's a brilliant experience. So I would recommend listeners going, if you haven't played it in a while, grab a mate, get on Amiga Live, or get on a real Amiga with two joysticks and get stuck in.
Hmm. And if you're only playing single player, pick up Bubble Bobble 2 or 3. That's Bubble Symphony or Bubble Memories, because as I remember those, I've got those on my arcade machine downstairs, and I've never had any problems playing those by myself. I often play those when the kids are sleeping, and their levels haven't been designed as viciously to be to kill you when you only are a single player. So they're good games as well.
So a slightly more enjoyable experience than single player on those.
Yeah, I find them more enjoyable, but that could just be me, because I'm very used to playing them.
Cool. So shall we start to wrap it up, mate?
Yeah, let's do.
Yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed playing that. I'm absolutely knackered now, because we've just done nearly an hour of Bubble Bobble. But it was class. So I think, like I said a minute ago, guys, go out there and have a go. Get back onto Bubble Bobble, because it's brilliant. And watch out for us this week, hopefully, trying to clock it on Twitch.
Yeah, let's see how that goes.
Yeah, and any shout-outs, Mads? Mad Mads?
Well, no, not really, actually. I haven't got any things I want to say this time.
Okay, I'll shout out to all the great podcasts out there, all the other retro gaming podcasts, you know who you are. And I'll give another quick little shout out to Paul Monaghan, having had a baby. All the best, congratulations, and good luck to baby Theo, and all the best to the missus as well. Brilliant. And apart from that, keep it retro, guys. Keep playing. Come and join us on Twitch. Come and join us on Amiga Live. And we'll catch you next time.
Yeah, and do come and join us at the forums playing Rainbow Islands, now that we've talked about Bubble Bobble. We have a score challenge right now where we're trying to play only the first 4 levels, and you see who can get the highest score within the first 4 levels.
And what's the highest score at the moment, Mads?
So right now it's my score at 450,000, I think.
Nice. I'm going to beat that.
Yep, no problem.
Yeah, I'm going to beat that. I'm not, but I'm saying I am. I'm going to try tomorrow. But we'll see. Anyway, cool. Right, we'll catch you next time, guys. Take it easy.
See you later.
This was a Castaway Media production. Find more great podcasts on our network. Visit castaway.media.